because we want to make sure that the people even are able to get basic money, and we make sure that as we deal with matters of transport, we take into consideration issues of the economy, take into consideration that transport matters also have got social issues and a social very social impact on everything that is happening. Having said that, Dr. Kisa, I'm going to be giving it to you for RSR to start their presentation, and welcome once more. Over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to all members of the portfolio committee and the police. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and portfolio committee members, colleagues. Maybe the outline of the presentation, Madam Chair, we will try to bring with the alignment that we have with maybe the medium term strategic framework and the NDP, how we see ourselves contributing to some of the things that were mentioned by the President today in the State of the Nation address. How are we contributing to the economic transformation in our little way? And obviously, how far we are with the Auditor General's recommendations and findings of the 2016 financial year. We'll share with the portfolio committee our board and the governance structure that we have. We have tried to obviously limit ourselves to some of the changes at the strategic level that were proposed for the 17-18 vis-a-vis the 16-17, the performance targets, and obviously what are our risks and some of the budgetary constraints that we might have, and our proposal in terms of revenue generation. Madam Chair, we relocate ourselves in terms of the medium term strategic framework outcome number 6, where we think where we align a lot better is on an efficient and competitive response to economic infrastructure network. But how do we do that? We obviously do that by having an improved safety management practices and systems within the industry. We look at compliance in terms of safety regulations, standards, and more importantly, the improvement directives that we put out for various issues. Thank you very much. What we also do is in our strategy, we ensure that we have constructive engagement with various important role stakeholders like suppliers and funders. We also believe that we need to improve a safe behavior around railway lines, and obviously that cannot be done without having an improved stakeholder management processes that we actually need to have. In line with our contributions, one of the things we believe in with the State of Nation Address, one of the things we believe in is what the term we call growing your own timber. Youth development, therefore, for the regulator is a very important element and a very key element of the things we do, because it's very difficult to find the skill set that we're actually looking for as a regulator. And therefore, our internship or our training program is very important to us in terms of supporting and sustaining our organization. We also do support a lot of people that in terms of the academic progress, by supporting them financially for them to study further. But also we do work very closely with at high school level with programs like Take the Girl Child to Work, but also A Man in the Making, which is done with Tracker. Those are programs that are very important to us, very close to our heart, as we believe in our strategy of growing our own timber. Also, women empowerment is very important. to show faith that 51% of the RFR employees are women, and about 13.03% of our budget expenditure for the 16-17 financial year was allocated to women. And that has increased, Madam Chair. I think last time we were here, we showed that it was about 6%. So there's a gradual increase on how we can get women enterprises working within the organization as we move forward. Another thing that we do in terms of economic transformation, or how we support economic transformation, one of the elements that we do is a reduction in unemployment and youth unemployment in particularly. We've got, as I said earlier, the engineering graduate program that we put up. We share, or we give out bursaries both to internal staff and external people that have finished grade 12. We have established an accredited railway safety inspector course, and that will go a long way to making sure that grade 12 can then have that qualification and then plow their trade in any of the other industries within the sector, so that they can then be safety inspectors. One of the things that we're also doing very closely, we have an MOU with the Pretoria University at the state, and we are busy with the development of a specific railway engineering degree. There's no such in South Africa. You either a civil engineer or a mechanical engineer or meteorological engineer or telecoms or signaling, and then you find yourself over time with experience in rail. And we're saying, let's put those disciplines together. And we've got that support from the Vice Chancellor of the University of Pretoria, and we believe that will be on the card very soon. Activating small business and corporate tips. We have spent about 89% of our budget in what we call BEE compliant companies, and 62% of that was spent on SMMEs, and we do support local suppliers whenever we go and do initiatives and whatever we are actually doing as a business. But also, more importantly, we are trying to grow small businesses, especially around engineering and human sectors, so that we're able to support them and they can be developed as SME enterprises and be able to support the business. I've shared in reducing inequality, the issue of 51% women that we've appointed. In terms of investment, increasing the level of investment within the railway sector, we believe by making sure that there's an asset management regulation, it will assist with the accreditation of suppliers and assist so that suppliers don't get barriers to entry within the market based on various other things that other people might put as barriers to entry. But if we level the playing field by having an asset management regulation, we believe that we're supporting that investment. And issues of security and railway reserve management regulation will also give confidence. If you have a secure system, and it will give confidence to whoever the investors that that's a system that can they can actually invest in the country in various elements of that particular system. One of the things that we have as a framework, I think what we've done through you, Madam Chair, as an organization, we have what we call for lack of a better word. We have what we call enforcement, education, engineering, and human factors, which is predominantly what is called a safety triangle, which is we call as one pillar that we have, which will produce, in our view, an outcome which is safer railways. But we also believe that if we are not an excellent organization, excellence, therefore, is one of the pillars, because it won't be sustainable for us to do that, so that we have sustainable institutional growth and development. So you will see an outcome in our strategy, which is sustainable institutional growth and development, because as a base to achieve that particular safer railways, you need to have excellence within your own internal people. But also, more importantly, you need to be relevant. So relevance is a very important strategic pillar to us. And how to become relevant? We believe that we must collaborate effectively with our stakeholders, and therefore one of the measures of performance and outcome is what we call improved stakeholder service or stakeholder management. You will see as one of the areas that we want to measure as an outcome, how are we dealing with our stakeholders as broadly as they are, and how collaborating with them to achieve the ultimate vision of the regulator, which is zero occurrence. Progress, Madam Chair, to date in terms of the 2015-16 audit outcomes, I'm happy to be able to announce that I think predominantly most of these have been resolved. But I'll maybe take it as we go through. What have we done? We did have issues that were raised around supply chain management in the 2015-16 by Auditor General, and those related from bid evaluation criteria not being utilized to tender documents and not in line with subcontracting, but also that suppliers in the service of the state did not fill the SBD form that we actually have as a requirement. All of those, Madam Chair, have been resolved with a training that we put forward in terms of the workshops that we've done with our internal staff. We capacitate our supply chain unit, but also more importantly, we established a compliance unit internally over and above as a layer of assurance for us, so that we make sure before internal auditors and external auditors come through that we are clear about our compliance in relation to that. The SBD 4 forms, we make sure that there is additional verifications that are in place, but also, as you are aware, that the central supply database that Treasury has that we also are using in terms of our procurement. Further to that, the issue of one of the challenges we had was the non-disclosure by a supply chain manager in terms of the relationship he had with the one supplier. And I think maybe this is very important to outline, Madam Chair, that it is not possible for us as a regulator. I don't know if there's any entity who has the system to be able to do this verification. Because this verification is only done, capabilities are there within Auditor General and looking at the Treasury database for them to be able to check. This relationship with this individual went back to 2005. We only employed the person in 2012. So it was not possible for us to know that in actual fact there was such a relationship unless the person has shared that relationship. And we are not going to be employing or purchasing such a system, Madam Chair, because it won't be viable for us to do that. All we are doing is continuing with our manual processes. We have increased our verification through our supply security management unit, but also more importantly, we have continued with the vetting process of our supply chain and finance people so that we can get to understand what relationships they might have that we don't know about if they don't share those with us for us to move forward. Then the issue of non-compliance with professional provincial procurement regulation, we have continued training of our supply chain team and our compliance team on the BBBE and Treasury CSD in January 2017, and we have verified all of those processes through a checklist, and our compliance team is looking at this. The issue of non-compliance with the supply chain management policy, the policy, I'm happy to announce that the board did approve it on the It was revised as a policy. There were many issues with the policy. It was not up to date. It was a 2007 or 2009 policy, so it's updated now with challenges that we find in 2017, and the board has approved and supported that policy on the 26th of April. Issue of declarations of interest, I think I did elaborate around that. It's the same issue. And obviously names of the bidders not published on our website as the requirement. We've got our compliance unit looking at that and making sure that all of those challenges or issues are dealt with. I'm happy to also announce, Madam Chair, that in 2016-17, we made sure with our internal audit unit that we do a full verification assessment, not just looking at the sample in terms of supply chain. All transactions have been audited by our internal audit team, and the submission has been made consistently through the ARC, and they haven't found any non-compliances in the 2016-17 financial year. So we expect that that will continue unless there's something else that we will pick up then with the external auditor. But we don't foresee any challenge in terms of supply chain at the end of this financial year's audit. Financial management, this related mainly to the annual financial statement, issues that related to commitments that were not complete, the operating leases. All of those, Madam Chair, have been concluded. It's something that we've looked at, even on our current draft annual financial statements that will be making it their way to the board. End of May, the policy that was not there was approved by the board in October 2016. The challenges that AG raised around technology audits in terms of invoices being incorrectly outlined, it was just one that was picked up in relation to this, and we put in an extra measure in place that supplies the senior manager for revenue will also do some reviews in relation to those particular invoices. The issues of prior period error notes not disclosed, that has been dealt with in terms of the CFO reviews. Fixed assets or inadequate determination of useful life and residual values, those are dealt with as part of the annual financial statement. I must say, Madam Chair, these are matters that are ongoing. Issue of assets, just maybe to bring to the attention of the committee, we're talking about tables and chairs, Madam Chair. Assets, we don't have trains and all of those things. So as a regulator, we're talking about a table and a chair that might be disappearing, and maybe at best an iPad. That's really the type of assets that we're talking about. But yes, they are our assets, and obviously something that is important to us, and we're putting systems in place to make sure that we're able to make sure that the floor and the register itself are aligned and they are showing, so that we don't understate or overstate the asset values in terms of the annual financial statement that we're presenting to the board at the end of May. Issues that were raised around human resources related to performance awards which were incorrectly calculated by the HRC and some of the incorrect percentages that were used which were at the detriment of the employees. All of those have been rectified, especially for the executives who took a view as executives that did get those bonuses that were paid back, and that was paid back during this financial year, and that matter has been resolved. And the issue that related to an amount approved by the board which was inconsistent with the memo submitted by the CEO, that we managed even by the end of that time with the auditors to show them proof that minutes of the board reflected correctly. So there was no, there might have been inconsistency in terms of the submission, but the amount the board approved was the right one, and therefore there's no risk, and there was no risk in relation to that. RFR board itself, Madam Chair, is starting a new term. So the term of the current RFR board, as outlined there, is ending on the 31st of October 2019, led by Dr. Zikunda. And we've just outlined the timelines there, with the CEO's contract having extended, and therefore his contract will end on the 31st of October 2021. The board charter is in place, Madam Chair, and it has been reviewed by the new board, and the shareholders' agreement is there. The performance assessments are conducted, and there is an annual review of the board assessment in relation to make sure that it functions properly, and therefore some of the things are looked at. All its meetings, this is just the meetings of how many meetings were formal meetings and special meetings of the board. You understand, Madam Chair, that at the beginning of the board needs to be inducted, and therefore there's a lot of special meetings that took place to get the board up to speed at the beginning so that they're able to support the business and understand how the business is working within the organization. The committees of the board, from a governance point of view, all of them have charters in terms of reference of each committee which were approved by the board. And obviously those will consistently be reviewed as and when the committee and the board thinks it's necessary. We have mainly three committees of the board, Audit and Risk Committee, the Relief Safety Committee and a Committee on HR, and the board took a view that the Information and Communication Technology Committee must be collapsed into the Audit and Risk Committee because of the risks are not that many, and therefore the Audit and Risk Committee's terms of reference would be reviewed to incorporate the ICT Committee. And the Procurement Committee is an ad hoc committee of the board as and when that committee is required to do any procurement-related activity. The changes to the strategic plan, and Madam Chair, I'm going to focus mainly on those, but as I've said earlier, that we have three pillars or three outcomes, which is safer railway, and we see this through us ensuring that we have strategic instruments to support the industry. And one of the things we've added in the new strategic plan that we you see in front of you is to make sure that to align safety objectives of the high-risk railway operators with that of the RFR, that's the objective that we've done, and to also determine the effectiveness of the RFR regulatory instrument. The board felt, having regulatory instruments, we need to assess their impact and their effectiveness. And the Madam Chair will remember at some point we did make a presentation on our regulatory impact assessment, which we did about 3 years ago, and the board felt it's important that we continuously do that assessment so that we understand what is required, but also to promote safe railway behavior, which will then culminate in looking at various other things of stakeholders around the railway system to be able to support what we're doing as a business. Sustainable institutional growth and development. The objectives mainly remain the same, and the strategic targets have been refined. Improved stakeholder service. Yes, this was a new outcome. What the board felt that it is important for us to have what you call a stakeholder matrix or stakeholder index to be able to understand how is the satisfaction of stakeholders as it relates to our ultimate activities that we do as a regulator. Because the board can't just be maybe hearing from us as management that people are happy. They need to have an understanding that a scientific basis to know that what are the stakeholders saying about the service that we are giving as a regulator in line with our mandate. Madam Chair, the targets that we could not achieve in the 16-17 financial year, we expect to achieve the 89% target in terms of all our APP, and three targets we could not achieve in the financial year, and two of them relate to implementation of regulation. Unfortunately, the issue of regulations and publishing of regulations has taken longer, and one of the things we're working on now is what we call a socio-economic impact assessment. That requirement came quite late in the financial year as a feedback or review point from DOT, and they gave that to us in about December 2016, and therefore we've been working on that to see we're able to comply with that requirement so that those regulations can be published, so that we're able to make sure people are able to comply and we have safer railways. The other one is relates to non-compliances, as we call it, around platform train interface. This relates to PRASA's inability to upgrade their stations and to meet the safety requirements in relation to stations. So because they are predominantly the station operators, it relates particularly to PRASA, and they could not meet the improvement directives. They only managed to achieve 1 out of 10 in terms of those improvement directives on stations. It is an area that we're working very closely with PRASA, Madam Chair, in terms of making sure that the directives from the inspectorate are met, and there is responses that is adequate and they're dealt with in the time that is required. So that is one of the areas that we could not. Just maybe to give context to to the committee, there's five areas of focus for the regulator, and I think we've shared that before. Platform train interface or platforms is one of them, and we have other four areas of focus. So we could not meet this particular target in particular as it's related to the improvement directive on station platform. It is still an area that even with the new train sets that are being launched, is still an area that we are very much concerned about, the alignment between infrastructure upgrades and the rolling stock deployment plan. It is an area of concern, and it's something that we're working very closely with the operator in that regard. Without repeating myself, Madam Chair, I think one of the things we did when we said what are the things that the board would want at the APP level on an annual basis to see that we're doing was to say let's have safety performance targets for the operator. Now, this is not an easy target, Madam Chair, but it is the right target. Because short of setting, you can't achieve zero occurrences without having safety targets. So, but those need to be done in a collaborative manner. So you can expect fireworks with operators, because I don't think we're going to find each other that easy, but it is an approach and a best practice worldwide to be able to find yourself with the operators on a year-to-year basis and set yearly, three-yearly, and maybe five-year targets so that we can be able to work together towards the same vision of zero occurrence. And obviously the improvement directives, as I think as I've shared, because improvement directives, Madam Chair, I think must have noted before that we've moved away from what we call input targets. It's easy to say we've done 20 inspections, 20 audits, and 30 investigations. So what? But if you've done those investigations, you should be able to see in the improvement directive that we issue and how quick we're able to close those within the timelines that has been set up. And that's what we're actually measuring ourselves against, so that we're able to make sure that we are outcome-based and not just show that we've done 20 investigations and 30 inspections and 30 audits. The regulatory framework will also be dealt with, and obviously our railway safety promotion initiative. We're expecting, I think the board expects a year-on-year improvement in operational efficiency and service delivery in terms of our strategy. And obviously, I think it is probably important for the stakeholder management in terms of outcome three is what is called a baseline. We, this year, are going to be working on a baseline stakeholder satisfaction index. Once we have that, then we've agreed as a board, we can have very clear analysis of what is the year-on-year improvement that the board expects from us in terms of our stakeholders, so that we're able to improve our stakeholder relations as an organization. Madam Chair, one of the slides I've included, which is probably not sitting in front of you in terms of the printed document, is maybe our heat map in terms of our risks. Where are we in terms of our risks? What risks do we see as a concern to the regulator? Probably your focus must maybe be on the red. That's the one risk in our view, which is risk number five. In terms of all of those that rated 1 to 10, 1 to 11, and we've got obviously the risk number 5, which is our cash flow, what you call insufficient cash flow for the organization. And the challenge mainly is around June, July, and March of every year. And this relates mainly to when permits are due and permits are, and therefore the money will be paid. And it is something that as a board we're looking at to see if we can better move some of the renewal dates of the operator so that we manage that cash flow in a much smoother and it doesn't spike in certain months and go too low in other months, which creates a challenge for the regulator in relation to that. It is not a budget issue, and I consistently say that it's got everything to do with cash flow. So it's when money comes in, if running a business, and we always say cash is king. Because we are not getting money predominantly from the fiscal, and we have a high percentage of our revenue which come from operators, and therefore they pay based on invoice, and it's a 30-day payment, and therefore that's what creates a problem for the regulator in terms of cash flow. Budgetary constraints, we have shared those in relation to that, but probably one of the things that we put forward as a board in terms of dealing with this is to obviously update our permittee model. This is part of our what we committed to our operators, that on year 3 and year 4 we'll update the model so that the model consistently becomes equitable, and we're able to do that. So one of our challenges at this moment is that the model is probably not as responsive to passenger risk. Passenger risks themselves are not probably that well responded to in the current model. And that's one of the things that we need to obviously look at, because that's a risk area that needs to be looked at so that we're able to respond to those adequately. And the environmental risks. Very important that our mandate, Madam Chair, says we need to make sure that we protect the people and the environment. One of the things we haven't done very well is how we deal with issues of dangerous goods or the environmental lag of our mandate. We started off with the people, and obviously it's one of the things that we need to make sure that our permittee model deals with the environmental lag, because that's our mandate in terms of the Act, that we need to protect the people and the environment. Madam Chair, that is our story. Thank you very much. There's an addition.
The first part that I wanted to emphasize is on the economic transformation. We believe as the board that given the size of the RSR, the economic transformation programs that are in place are radical in so far as the size of the RSR is concerned. If we're talking 89% of spend on BE compliant companies, and so you're talking 62% spend on SMEs and corporations, That is, we believe that we're doing well at the RSR in that area, and we continue as the board to emphasize to make sure that, you know, those areas are not left behind, because it is one of the areas that government is actually focusing on to ensure that the programs that are meant to transform the economy are actually done in that way. Second part, then I also need to clarify to the Portfolio Committee, Madam Chair, when the CEO mentioned that the procurement committee of the board. Just to add there, to say, in line with your PSMA, the procurement and all the procurement systems are issues that relate to the accounting officer. Where does the board come in? The board only come in terms of, in line with the delegation of authority, where maybe the procurement of a particular single project is over, let's say, a threshold in terms of the delegation is over 2 million rand, for instance. That is only when the board will get involved. However, generally, under normal circumstances, the board does not get involved in the procurement. And also to say, insofar as the regulations are concerned, we, as the board, are monitoring the relationship in terms of RSR and the department to make sure that there is a working relationship, in, to make sure that there are no delays and there is common understanding. Because some of the things that create these delays is when sometimes some of the time the officials are not in agreement with each other. So we are actually working on that to make sure that there is that synergy and understanding right at the beginning when the regulations, the necessity of the regulations are actually informed by the circumstances on the ground. And also the relationship with the operators is one of the key areas that we believe is important for us to have a working relationship with the operator. Of course, as a regulator, you likely to have bumpy kind of circumstances and times because you are a regulator, that are the operator. However, that relationship is, it needs to be a working relationship between the two parties, because each of us has got a mandate that we need to accomplish. Then the last part, Madam Chair, would be on the cash flow management. The board is having an eye on that, and we want to make a commitment to say we will be working hard to make sure that there is better management of cash flow, as the CEO says, that we do not run into those same cycles of troubled all the time, where we do not we are not able to finance maybe our operations. I just needed to emphasize that. And another debate that the board is still engaged in is the revenue generation necessity and capability of the RSR. I think those are the areas that I just needed to emphasize, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Peter.
Can we then go discussing it while we don't know anything? There's nothing in front of us. No. That is best. Again, Chairperson, let me start from slide number 4. From the presenter. Please clarify us on your slide number 4. Let me open it. Most of the time, I used to say, you must help us in order to be able to help you. But if you don't help us, how are we going to help you? In slide 4, I've noted something specific. In terms of our advisor, visa, the auditor general findings and recommendations, which is specific and very interesting. Yourself, among the other group, you were also in that category whereby you spoke about achievements reported by yourself and as well as Brasa were either incorrect or not supported by appropriate sufficient evidence to confirm the accuracy and the reliability of the report. I will say the news and one. Because here you said that everything is coming well, it's coming well. Tell us exactly what it is coming well. Are you able now to submit the relevant documents? Are you able to produce them? And then also, concerning the issue of the SORNA initiative, visa the RSR contribution, may you please help us? Myself, I've got a problem whereby a lot of people, they will in paper, they will say that there is a new development in women empowerment. But when it comes to the geographical demarcation of our province, you are not reflected. What do you mean exactly by that? Do you appear in other provinces or only you speak about big cities? Because most of the time, these structures are appearing in the city, not in our provinces. And then here on slide number 5, you spoke about the rigorous economic transformation. You know, on slide which I'm speaking about the supply chain policy. I agree, but in terms of the principle that you must empower a black in particular, I don't know how is the program, if you can try to give us a presentation that at this moment you were able to empower these so much people. I like just to point the picture that you are doing that while practically you are doing the opposite. Do you have any in terms of the percentage if you can
challenge. And I spoke about the risk. My question is the vacation is the challenge. You see, this one has been together to say, compliance is guided by the relevant structures equal to the task, which is given upon your online function. Therefore, my question, do you have e-risk management now? And if do you have it, always I used to ask this question, I know why. Who constitutes it? Because most of the time some people will tell that they do have e-risk management. But if you ask the question who constitutes it, it's very difficult to come up with exactly who constitutes it. And the other one is slide number 13 about the audit findings. With 13, let me come with this. No. Let me go to slide number 20. Yeah. Chairperson, there is a place where I'm really worried about the issue of the slide number went by the talk about the compliance and the inability to improve by BRASA. 1 out of 10. What is that 1 out of 10? The correlation or whatever, okay, flower. Tell us exactly so that you can be able, when we meet with BRASA, so that you raise those facts that you are unable to comply with this and this and this and this. Unlike that, to give the, this average to say 1 out of 10, whatever. But tell us exactly what are the issues facing BRASA, because BRASA is also a victim which was identified by the Auditor General as one of the culprits. Yes, we confirm it, but what is it? What are the issues?
you are empowering the companies which end up empowering the 12%. That's one of the clarities. Is it you who appointed the 12%? So let's go to page 4, or slide number 7. When you are talking about the reduction of the risk, the value, reduction of crossing occurrence in different conditions. So we just want to know the status of signing on the public road towards to the railway crossing. Because most of the railway crossing, mostly on the run provinces, the signage is either the signage which was done during a passing time, which is in the color of the thing is no more visible. So can you tell us maybe if it's not you who is responsible, but I think you can advise the department concerned to put the signage to avoid collisions and also visible crossing that the railway line without any problem. So the slide number, page 5, about the auditor outcome. We were talking about the auditor. Is it the internal audit report or is it the AG report? Because we're not sure. If the AG report or if it's not AG report, we also want to know 2016 year. The findings of the auditor general to the APP. But this is the FEMA qualified or unqualified. What do you think you, in terms of financial management, the audit must be got to understand that we thought maybe on during your presentation you will get some feedback. Of financing the smooth running of the entity. Page 7 is about the members of board. There are board members, the majority, 85%, are male-dominated board members. So, but the department, because it's around, must explain. Because the one who appointed the board to the department member that they say, as to why do they appoint such a board? The other thing is about the board meeting. We're worried about the board meeting on each and every entity. Because 2016, you had a normal board, 7 board meetings and 2 special board meetings. This is about 9 board meetings. And this year, 2017, you had already 2 regular board meetings and 3, which is 5 now. So we just want to know about the payment and the remuneration of this board meeting. More, because we don't want these members of the board to use what we to gain, like what we saw in Tarasa, which is just abnormal. Because remember, in terms of the company laws, normal board meetings must be 4 maybe per annum, and you can have some special board meetings. Because most of the board meetings are the committee meetings, which are working through of the board. So maybe we need an explanation about the remuneration envelope and their budget. And if this meeting approved by the minister or not. The page 10 would like the department also to respond department has been waiting for the publication and the comment from the monetary department. What is the DOT doing in terms of maybe communicating with the sister department of monetary information? Because the entity now is just waiting for this department, at least in the present, to respond in terms of publishing and comment. And the other things which we would like the department to so, what is the department doing when there is only one out of 10 top layers that the cluster on our railway line? So, I think the APT, they will do everything, but we need the department itself to take charge so that this compliance can be reduced maybe to 8-10. 1 out of 10, we can't admit and bless it. So this level is about to evaluate. So next time when you come to make a presentation, we'd like you to try to draft to show us the percentage in terms of the reduction. Maybe the financial year. So that we can see whether the accidents are increasing or decreasing, or number to give us like as members of the committee. So the other thing is about the awareness. What is your awareness progress through the radio, media, print media, or whatever, in terms to make our road line in to be safe. Lastly, it's about the department and also the entity. In your presentation, you never gave us like about the railway safety bill. Railway safety bill, which is a process, and the National Rail Policy and the National Rail Act. And the National Rail Bill. There are three. Railway Safety Bill, National Rail Policy, and National Rail Act. The finalization of it. But I think the president is going to finalize that. We just wanted to do something because we want to have a different.
Thank you, Chair. I want to say one thing for you now. But I want to also to commend you about and welcome the presentation from the RFR. My question is also starting in the economic transformation. If I remember correctly, last year, the RFR came and presented that they are having some stakeholder engagement with other NGOs to try and put an educational program to educate the society and the community around the rail safety line. So that we try and put safety measures for those who are living next to their rail line. I'm trying to check how far are they and what's happening with it. Maybe the other aspect in terms of their outcomes, in terms of the MTFF framework, is that their strategy outcome is that the rail safety, you know, is going very well. But if you can be able to get a percentage in terms of the fatalities that also happen there, whether are they getting there or not. Because if I exactly the previous financial year. They gave us a particular presentation. But you see, they didn't. Also, with what our honorable member of the church mentioned, that you know, it's very much difficult for us to engage on what the RSR want to have as an additional amount of money to support their financial performance if we don't have or see any financial statements or any presentation for their activities. The other aspect, Chair, is in relation to our Chair. I would like to get the copy of the minutes in relation to the on their slide 15 where they spoke about the outcome progress of the audit report. If you can be able to get the copy of the minutes, so that you can be able to check what happened there and how do you deal with it. I think the reissue of the board, you must wait for the minister to come so that you can be able to account why this board not balanced in terms of the agenda. I think it's the responsibility of the minister to be able to respond to that. The other issue, Chair, is on that slide 20 on the target carriers over 2013 financial year. That the compliance with the transfer, the platform interface. If you remember correctly, Chair, this is a question that has come for the third, if not fourth time, to the particular committee. Must be able to also check also with us as they come in here. What happened, because if I remember correctly, in two financial years, they allocated a particular budget amount of money to deal with this platform interface. And they also, you know, reported to us that they are getting there. They also reported that in Chimisti, if you can go there, we saw a different kind of case of the platform interface. But if ever the RSR as a regulatory and SOE and also monitors the performance of PRASA, doesn't see this thing, it really tells that the PRASA is reporting lies to us. And if they are reporting lies, slash ever must be ready for them next week. If they come here, I'm already having my Zamboko here to beat at them, because they must be able to inform why they have money and they are not implementing this thing. If ever it's 1 out of 10, means they've done nothing. You know, if ever there were about 10 platform interviews, they've done maybe half. They didn't even done half, if that maybe one, out of all 10 this platform interface. And which is a very, very serious one. And that means the safety of our people is not guaranteed. If the other issue that I've just mentioned, that the finances that you require for you to help you to, you know, as a supplement from government, can be able to assist you. If you can be able to assist us in terms of the a cure or a little bit more explanation in terms of this expanding on the finances that you wanted to share. We're going to a debate for the allocation of funds. You must give us at least a little bit of background as members of parliament so that you can be able to assist you. Otherwise, we won't be able to help you with anything of this, making sure that the minister try and push the allocation of this budget of money. because that's the only thing that you must be able to engage about in order for you to be able to raise more sheep and more supervisory or advisory process towards the branch and other range safety implementation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to start off by adding my voice to what was mentioned by my colleague about the absence of financial reports and detail on financials. Yet, you dare to say that you have some cash flow constraints. But then, parallel to that, I also observed that you've got a North Beach Durban Rail Safety Conference next week, in fact from the 9th to the 11th of May. So could you then tell us what the expected outcome of this conference is in the light of your cash flow problems? Is this conference really necessary? How much money would be spent in this conference and what would this contribute to? Because I see that it is intended that this conference, as you put it on Twitter, should be a discussion on social impact of rail evolution, which is a very ambitious theme, but you really think that is within the current context of necessary needs and the state of our rail currently, whether this is totally aligned with what we currently deal with. On a lighter note, I also observed that the delegate package that you offer is 10,000 rand. Is that a way to eliminate your cash flow problem or what? But I can't put all of this together. I can't see how you can organize a conference with an ambitious theme like we have, and then we sit with reports that speak of a transport sector in crisis. When I get to my questions, I would like to start off with outcome number six. Outcome number six specifically talk of efficient and competitive and responsive economic infrastructure. And your bullet points guide me to my question, because the first bullet point speaks of accountability, which in essence places the railway safety regulator as some form of protector of accountability in terms of our stakeholders. The second bullet point supports this in that it says the railway safety regulator can issue directives, and in fact three types of directives: the safety directive, the standard directive, and the improvement directive. The third bullet point talk of constructive engagement, in other words, actual involvement in terms of this responsibility. And then the fourth bullet point, a safe railway behavior, which talks of a particular culture that you need to create. And then lastly, about general improvement. Now, my question around this is because all of this, in terms of outcome six, then poses two very important elements. The one is the opportunity to get involved versus where and when you should be involved. Now, in your opinion, if we look at what happened around the railway improvement objectives and the outcome, what was planned and what happened at Prasa specifically, don't you believe that you should get involved far sooner? And I'm talking of during the tender process of inquiry around getting the rail stop. And in the whole procurement process, in other words, to be involved in a proactive way rather than a reactive way like we've seen now. And whether you feel that you should get involved far sooner in that process? My second question relates to what we heard yesterday from the AG, and that is that there were very serious deficiencies by RSI in terms of performance planning and reporting that must be improved. And this was mentioned all around related to page number 9, where it's about the quality of service delivery, because I also I'm aware that we have a general trend, and in particular in the Sozolosa compartment of product provision, that there's a general decline in rail usage and an increase in subsidy per passenger. To what extent do you think the perception about using rail as a transport medium because of all sorts of reasons contribute to this? Would you place this directly in line with passenger experience? Because when we look at the presentations that we often get of PRASA as being the service provider and you as the guardian of safety, to me, there's this increasing gap between the two. On the one side, we have the responsibility to provide a service, but then on the other hand, we talk about the restrictions of responsibility in that railway safety regulator only focuses on assets and not so much on the experience of our commuters. My last question then specifically wants to address passenger risk. And I would like to then recall what I read around May month last year, and that was with the tragic incident of Darryl August, where Mr. Poya specifically said that you are investigating the safety of passengers on board trains. What has happened to that report? Would it be possible for this committee to get an insight in that report? Because I'm sure that is exactly what we need. We need some form of auditing, because you have the power at hand. You are the ones that issue an annual safety permit. And I'm sure that you can, in a way, have this lever around issuing safety permits under the condition that there is a particular outcome related to the undertaking of a service provider in terms of strategic planning. Because surely you must also carry the responsibility to give us a form of judgment around what a particular service provider intends doing about the safety of passengers, and your report will then actually tell us what has happened and how safe passengers are. Otherwise, I don't know how we would evaluate these two elements, and I'm sure we can improve around the evaluation and measurement of that. In particular, I'm exposed to the Western Cape situation because I'm from here and because we have our MEC here. I would like to know what your involvement, particularly in the Western Cape, is, because we've seen what seems to be a tremendous increase in incidents in the Western Cape, in particular in relation to other provinces. So if you could then also just give us an idea of your involvement in the Western Cape in particular. Lastly, Chair, I would like to speak on something in a more practical sense, and that relates to the level crossing occurrences. And the question there is whether we can get some idea in terms of whether, firstly, you have done an audit of some form of level crossings nationally on a provincial basis. Could we get some breakdown of the type of safety measures around these crossings? Because in some of the visits that I've undertaken, I've seen a wide variety of types of warning signals, some of which would have no effect at night. So I'm very concerned about this, and I would like to just get your feedback on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honourable members, and probably through you, Chairperson, your team will be able to respond to the questions that have been posed.
just want to check with yourself that realizing the fact that there is no alignment between the platforms, how are you advising Prasa in this regard? What are the things that you believe as a portfolio committee we can also be able to do, because Prasa will be coming to the portfolio committee, that we able to really cohere them? I am aware of the fact that Prasa has not been able to utilize their CAPEX finances to the fullest, and believing that this is one of the things that as we do oversight, we should be able to say what are good push so that they are able to do that kind of an alignment, because that is one of the things which has come to me, I think, as very, very challenging. But I would want to also understand your target, because I believe that your targets are based on the fact that you're dealing with safety, and it becomes kind of a difficult thing for you to be able to say we will put the target in such a way that one of which we have safety regulations, and we want to make sure that safety is upheld in everything that the is doing. So therefore, as we will be supporting, probably we also need to say these are the things that we believe that as a portfolio committee, PRASA is doing as a disservice in terms of us making sure that we do our work to the best of our ability. You have already indicated some of the things that we did with your presentation, but we believe that we should be able to move into the little things that PRASA thinks they don't matter, which actually matters to RSR very, very critically. And then we are able to monitor them on these issues that you have raised, and we are also able to say, these are some of the things, the targets that you have set up for us to make sure that PRASA is able to live up to the ideals. I know that the outgone acting of CEO, Mr. Lituan, was indicating a number of things that he made an observation around. For example, the speed of the train, which actually had to be reduced because the railway line, actually, there are problems which I believe that it is part of the job that you are doing in making sure that there is safety. In some instances, the lines have really caved in. There should be maintenance. In some instances, the signals, many other things that you can be able to talk to. What are the systems that you believe as a portfolio committee we should be able to put in place as we do our oversight, as we engage with PRASA, because somewhere there is disengagement in terms of service delivery. I think it's disengagement in terms of service delivery because you expect them to make sure that they comply with the safety issues as they are rendering the services. And that is why every morning, like listening to SASR, for the good of it, the trains are late, the trains never arrive, and all those things. And when you see it as someone who is every now and then engaging with this thing, they are delayed because the reduction of the speed to over 70% because the railway lines are no longer as smooth and as is expected. We cannot be able to do certain things. The trains never come precisely because there has been certain things that have been done. Portfolio committee, give us directives as to how to engage these people. And we probably, there's a need for cohesion. We have to coerce PRASA to do its work because I like saying that with the train, it is the last person on the ladder who uses a train. The good CEO of PRASA, the chairperson of the board of PRASA, probably they will never in their lifetime use a train. Not unless we say we are in the premier training kind of a thing, but in essence, these metro rails that our people are using for livelihood, for economic issues, for social issues, they really don't use those. And how do we get something which can be able to assist you to do your work in terms of safety issues in the rain environment, and us making sure that we won't, because we know that the laws, legislation is coming, sometimes legislation gets passed and then it gets archived, and that's how do we help that?
Madam Chairperson, let me bring it back to you so that you can be able to. I thought that the minister was going to be talking.
Can
sure.
Afternoon, Chair, delegates, and thanks for your presentation. My interest in being here today is obviously to look from a Western state perspective, and I would really like to also say to the Rail Safety Regulator, I come and see you in Gauteng at some stage, together with the Western Cape operating people from Castle. I think we've got to look more at how railways run from the bottom up rather than the top down. Therefore, I'm strongly in favour of deregulation. But obviously, you can only deregulate and assign functions if there's capacity to operate. That has to obviously apply. Then I've got a question around technology. What are you doing as the safety regulator to see whether we are planning in South Africa? I know the new train sets and the infrastructure challenges that we have, particularly protection in the rail reserve and all the copper cables and the signalling. And is there any research and development capacity within the Rail Safety Regulator to look at satellite control of trains, for example, like there is in India, where there are huge amounts, numbers of people who are moved in Mumbai, for example, and those trains can actually be moved by remote control, because when there's cable copper theft here in the Western Cape, I mean, yesterday we had to cancel 21 trains. Out of a total stock of 71 trains. And in the Western Cape, we need 120 trains to operate, because our people, particularly from Cardich and Mitchell's Plain, are travelling, and if you talk about safety, I've been on a couple of times, I've tried to get on trains in the morning in Cardich or Netref, Stasi. We can't get on the trains because they're too full. People are hanging out of doors and windows. And to me, that's the primary role of the Rail Safety Regulator. And those are the kind of issues I want to come and talk to you about with the regional management at some stage. So if you get a call from me, please don't be surprised. I'm coming to you to ask for your advice and help and support. I'm not coming to criticize. I'm not running into the media. I'm coming to get your help for the safety of our passengers in the Western Cape. Thank you.
Technology is a game changer on how you can improve safety. In actual fact, our conference that is in Durban is got a theme, is done under a theme called Railway Safety in a Digitized Environment. Now, the question is asked,
why do we do that conference? Education and awareness is one of our pillars, of the three pillars of making sure that we're able to improve things. If you remember through you, Chairperson, that 80% to close to 85% of the fatalities that take place within the railway system is not the railway operators people themselves, it's the community. And therefore engagement of communities is very important. But why we thought this is important at this time is that the trains that PRASA is bringing, and they are being launched next week in Pretoria, are even better than some of the planes we have in South Africa. Now, if you don't understand the technology within that train itself and its capability, you're actually going to create more of a risk than actually the improvement of safety itself. And that's why our conference, if you check our conference over 3 days, we've got master classes on how human factors interface with machines. Because it's a human being that needs to be changed in terms of mindset, so that he or she is able to operate the train, that they know in the morning that they must set the train properly with its parameters, so that the technology can be able to assist with safety activities. It's not a simple thing that you can do, but what we've identified as a regulator as an area of concern. We don't want when those trains start operating that you have incidents that could have been prevented. Just to give you an example, Madam Chair, when we ran the pilot in Pretoria, those trains don't move without doors being closed. If the doors are not closed, that train is not going to move. If the communities don't understand that and the driver don't understand, people could burn the train. So it's very important that we have that conference. And yes, it's not a revenue generation, honorable member. It is obviously to recover some of the costs, even though we have a responsibility of making sure that. So technology is here to stay, and therefore we're saying, let's have an understanding of technology so that we're able to assist ourselves in achieving our desired objectives. The chairperson is asking, how can we maybe assist? And I think there was a discussion around, but I think what we want to share, Madam Chair, is that the signaling is still a problem with us. It is still a problem. In actual fact, we've given them a date of end of May to comply with some of the things. Now, we as we sit now, without preempting their response, with the information we have at our disposal, we wonder how they're going to do it by end of May. Say that to which means we'll lay a penalty in relation to that. But penalty alone will not be able to assist. It is important that we understand that procurement around the Western Cape, or even in the other areas of railway material, like stairway material, one of the challenges of infrastructure is that the procurement processes and the long-term view that they're supposed to have in terms of providing those materials over time is not in place for whatever reason. We're not getting to procurement activities as a regulator, but they have an impact on safety and what needs to happen. So if PRASA could start having a long-term view on how they procure things, so that they don't end up with year-on-year procurement, because that takes its time in terms of that. We are having, through you, Madam Chair, an assessment that is going to be done on PRASA by the Office of the Rail Regulator in UK. Because we seem to have a disagreement, and sometimes being said to be conflicted, or us being interested in money only and therefore not able to do the work that we're supposed to do. And we then decided it's an incorrect way to bring an independent assessor that will be able to then come in and assess PRASA's capability and be able to identify the risks associated with the process, so that we, and that's not at any cost, Madam Chair, it's actually a relationship we have with ORR, and they will come and do that, and hopefully when that assessment is done, it will lay to bed this idea that whatever we're asking for things that are not necessary. We always, as a regulator, want expect more than what is actually necessary in relation to that. And those are the things that we are bringing, so that when we have that report at the end of October, which will be done by the Office of the Rail Regulator in UK, then that report will show, using the RM3 processes of risk assessment that they have, that in actual fact what we're asking for is not necessarily impossible, but it is the right thing to do in the environment in which they're operating. And I think that's what we're actually trying to do in management of our stakeholders, so that we don't get into a fight that are unnecessary in that process.
What do they mean when they say you have indicated? What have they indicated to you? What are the things that make them say you have contributed?
Madam Chair, this is not what they say to us directly. But these are things that they tell to people. And they share this to other people. And say, they always say we are interested in money. Like, this is their argument. They always say everything we're asking for. DOT can confirm. They even go to DOT and say, RSR is just interested in money. Now, that is an incorrect approach to things. Now, obviously, we need to pay our people and have the quality skills to be able to do the work we do. It's very important. But if you're going to only put everything together as it relates, it boils down to money and RSR wanting money. I mean, one of the arguments we have now, and this is something we are hoping that the minister and DOT will agree to us, is that it is not possible for us to continue supporting PRASA in the manner in which we do without them paying us more money. Now, we obviously have a process of procurement in relation, not procurement, of determination of tenant fees. Now, obviously, that's the minister's role and responsibility. We can't get into that thing. We only action whatever is put out in terms of law. We have put an argument forward because we have looked at last year that if we have to do all this work that we did to make sure that PRASA's trains stay on track, it is impossible for us to do that without additional funding. When we, I think as Madam Chair said, when we last year said we are not going to do more work for you, PRASA, because it's costing us a lot of money, we're just going to stop trains. Obviously, it was a difficult thing to swallow. But it was at a point to say, the more work we do, we actually at a point where we're overstepping our boundaries as a regulator. But it requires resources for us to be able to do that. And that's why we continue to plead with the department and plead with the minister that give us enough resources for us to be able to do the work that we need to do to continue to make sure that trains are stay on track in this country. Because without that, it is impossible, or virtually impossible, for us to give the same support we've given to PRASA in the 17-18 financial year like we did in the 16-17 financial year.
It is our take that the Technical Committee can help us by making PRASA understand that a regulator is a necessary evil, because we deal with artificial and we deal with prioritization. When RSR would issue a payment for it is important that there is a common understanding that those conditions that are put in, they are prioritized by PRASA to avoid the situation that happened in the past. When we were appointed in November, Madam Chair, the first thing we had to deal with was the issue that you were raising later on, where PRASA was not getting a payment, yet the payment was due because they had not met the conditions that were set. And we extension. And with the previous minister, when I went to the conference and I was meeting with her, one of the things that she said was that she expects the RSR to have peace. So it is therefore, once I hear that Madam Chair is not nice to say now we're going to be grounding the train, it is not that the RSR wants to ground the train. It is because safety is an issue, and that's what Arizar is about, to make sure that those passengers on trains are actually safe. So I think that understanding with PRASA as an operator is important, so that their priorities are actually set right on the issues of the issue of safety. I just wanted to add that, to say just the issue of the attitude, prioritization. There is an issue that you raised, Madam Chair, about us setting targets on safety, that those targets have to be achieved through the operators, when we say they are the ones that must ensure that, you know, there are no occurrences and all of that. There has to be a mechanism to make that happen. Because if RSR is about safety and the passenger, the occurrences are increasing, RSR is not effective. In other words, as a regulator, we are unable to do what we're supposed to do. In as much as we are not operators, and it's in their hands to actually implement the recommendations that we put in, that common understanding is important for us to be able to deliver on what we are expected to. So I think that issue of the targets of safety, we cannot have them, because it's what we are about as the regulator. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the chairperson is clarifying it very well. It's the age. Now, obviously, the framework that Auditor General uses was done somewhere in 2006 or 2007, and we're now in 2017. Now, the board requires that we consistently reduce incidents. Now, that's an impact target. So the challenge that we probably still continue to have, Madam Chair, if the framework of Treasury doesn't move with the time, and the expectations from a regulator is not to just say how many inspections and audits that you have done, it's easy for us to do that, and we can provide evidence for that. But is that really why Parliament has established a regulator? I don't think that's what we are about, making sure that there's an impact. Where we find difficulty between ourselves as a board and Auditor General and their framework is that they want a smart target. Now, the definition of a smart target might differ from what they call a smart target and what we call a smart target. A smart target to us is reduction, because that's an impact. That's the reason why a regulator was put in place. The day we're not able to achieve that, we're not worth the money we've been paid as a regulator if we're not able to get to that level. And that's why we have a zero occurrence vision. It is a debate, and you'll probably at some point still continue what we did in 16, in 17, 18, though, Madam Chair, so that you are able to see. As a board, we took a decision that let's give that plan, this one we presented today, to the AG first, so that they can then review it, so that we can find ourselves in terms of the particular setup of KPIs and targets. So we're hoping in the 17-18 financial year, these challenges might not be, would be challenges of the past, but still it begs the question, if you're not going to be able to look at reduction in incidents or the impact that the regulator has, what then becomes the measure of performance of the regulator? And I think that's really where the challenge is in relation to those particular issues that the incident has. The other question I think was asked is around how can we get involved at a proactive level? And I think that's probably something we need to do when we look at the rail policy and the mandate that gets to be given to the regulator. In the event that we decide on a new railway safety group, it is possible to change our involvement to at a proactive level rather than being reactive. And that's where most countries in the world are moving to. We have the capabilities and the capacities, Madam Chair, to do monitoring prior to things becoming problematic. We actually always talk about leading indicators. But our mandate becomes very difficult because it doesn't allow us to deal with some of those leading indicators. We are looking at that in terms of infrastructure, and we're finding a way to see. That's why we talk about technology review.
But even that technology review regulation or determination itself is weak. And therefore, it requires to be beefed up. And that's why, at some point, we made a submission to the department around a regulation on technology reviews. Obviously, they gave their review point, and we're hoping that process, through the update of the act in terms of the bill, will obviously come and find a home so that we're able to deal with the roles and responsibilities of the regulator in the current railway system that we actually have. Just to also, Madam Chair, on clarification, we normally bring information in here that is audited. So we are not at this stage where we normally present the state of safety report. That's when we need to show what reductions and what has happened at a particular time. That's normally at the time that the committee is dealing with the annual report. And just to maybe, for the committee to bear with us, that we'll bring that report once it's actually audited, so that we share with you with audited information so that we're able, and there's a verification process that is underway to be able to deal with that at this moment. The issue of NGO, I think that was raised by Honorable Kadebe. We know, and maybe we have not moved at the same pace we expected to at the last time when we were here. We are still intensively involved to see how we can improve our stakeholder engagement through utilization of NGOs. And that process is still underway, and we do hope that by the end of 17-18 financial year, through our corporate social investment unit that we have put up, we will be able to get to finality on that and be able to use NGOs more effectively that are involved with people on the ground around how we improve the behaviors of some of our commuters and the people around railway reserves. The other question, I think, was the issue around visibility or level crossings in general. Just to maybe share, one of the things we'll be discussing at the conference is the issue of technology around level crossing, because it's a technology conference. It's also how to improve that, what can we put in place. We do have in South Africa at the moment, where we've had for the last 2.5 years, pilot sites, where we piloted technology in Bushhoek and Delma. And that technology, we're well aware of what is the reliability level in terms of safety. But obviously the discussions that we're also having is also to able to look at issues of behavior around level crossing. We have a research program project that is running underway at this moment, looking at how behaviors of drivers around level crossing. And that's something that is we're doing with our friends in Sweden, because they've done many of those studies, and we're transferring that particular skill set. Hopefully in the next 3 months or so, we'll have that empirical evidence and report, and we can definitely share that with the committee, I'm sure, when we present our annual report later on. The other question, I suppose, that was asked related to the 51% that we talk about in women, that's just employees of the RSR. Is 51% of RSR employees are women. There was also a question of around issues of disability. Because we are such a small entity, but we have a target at the border side, which is 2%. We've achieved 1% so far in terms of employing people with disabilities. But I think what maybe the committee must take is, right, you need to make, we did seek guidance from the Department of Labor and other people that work on this. You need to make the offices conducive to a person with disability before you bring them to the particular working place. And really, we've been working on that to improve those particular areas in relation to that. Maybe one of the things that is, I've shared a slide, and I must apologize to you, Madam Chair, that we didn't include the last slide in terms of the documentation around financial information. Our apologies, our real apologies. But I think what's probably dominant that you see here is we are hoping that in terms of our revenue, we will increase our revenue to be able to assist us. But obviously, that figure might reduce to maybe something like 200 or 250, dependent on what the minister decides with the 30 million rand that we're requesting. There is a 30 million rand that we're requesting, and we do hope that the minister sees value in that 30 million rand to be added on top of PRASA's permit, so that we're able to assist PRASA and be able to assist the country overall. Now, obviously, we've made the plea, we've made the submission. All we can do, Madam Chair, is hope and wish that that approval is given to us. But I think maybe one of the things that's very important to note, Madam Chair, we raised the issue of cash flow as a risk. But that cash flow that we have as a risk is also as a result of the funding model that the Parliament has decided, or government has decided, to fund the regulator through permit fees. Now, we're not so sure if that is the best way to fund the regulator, because that actually creates a lot of conflict between us and our operators. Conflict that can be removed if we were just funded from the fiscal. But obviously, that's a decision at the policy level that needs to be determined. And we really do feel that we are put at a conflict with the operators unnecessarily so. Because if our percentage of permit fee funding, that 143 was the grant and the 59 was permit, it would maybe make things a little bit different in terms of our engagement, because that's where our challenges are. But that's obviously a debate and a discussion maybe between Parliament and Treasury to be able to, and departments to be able to support and be able to deal with how we deal with the regulators' funding models in relation to that. The other issue around visibility at different centers, Madam Chair, we must say that the board did approve the decentralization strategy, and we are in full steam in terms of that decentralization strategy from 1st of April. We will be having visibility in Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and the Eastern Cape. Currently, our visibility is on and Northern Cape. Currently, our visibility is sitting in the three major centers. And we acknowledge that, and we'll be able to deal with those things as we actually move forward. So I just wanted to give that context, Madam Chair.
The issue of funding that the CEO is relating to, it's sort of a discussion is actually necessary to look into this, because the very fact that the regulator is established by government and then it must be established by operators that might be monitored by the regulator. That is why you have these kind of talks that say the RSR is about money, which is one of those revenues. Whereas if government was established the regulator and funded it, you would not sort of, let's say, funded it 80%, let me make that example. You would not have this kind of debate, because the more resources that got to be applied to make PRASA, as an example, to make PRASA to be compliant, the kind of skill and expertise that RSR must have to actually enhance and make sure that PRASA it requires money. So I think the issue of funding, once we are not opening it up, but we are just saying the RSR operation is dependent on permit fees that are debated or the operators do not want to pay. Even in the Transnet, they argue why they should pay the amount of money that they pay. So all the operators do not want to pay. They don't see why. They all think it's unfair. They all think it's not justifiable and so on. So I think that is very important. Coupled with this is also a requirement that RSR must not retain any money at the end of the financial year. So you do see that there's a lot that we still need to engage on. If you say at the end of the financial year we must not retain a cent, but at the same time this money comes from the operators and the issues of payment and timing and all of that. So it does create the cash flow situation that we presented earlier on. to say we do have a cash flow problem that entails with managing this money. We are relying on the money that will come from the operators. If they are unable to pay for whatever reason, then the others are just is not able to operate for that much of money. I just wanted to emphasize that point,
Madam Chair. Madam Chair, one thing maybe I forgot to respond to was around, I noted on New Age this morning, the front page is around the issues of security of persons on board trains. And I think it is correct that we have an investigation underway around some of those issues of safety of persons on board trains and security. We have a regulation which is partly one of the regulations that will probably be published by the department in the next 12 months relates to issues of security management. So it's also a way, or railway reserve management, all of those is a way of improving the security arrangement around a train and make sure that at least we can make sure that persons, when they get on board trains or around trains, they are a bit more secure in terms of what they need to do. So that's something, Madam Chair, that there's an agreement between us and DOT on that. It's just a matter of time before those particular regulations are then published so that we're able to improve the issue of safety around on board or around trains themselves. Thank you.
If you can pass it through to Minister
Mbeki,
that
Thank you, President. Brief response from the department on the things that are related to the department. I will start with the issue of the board. The president, I will not repeat, the minister said it clearly yesterday on what he's going to do with the board and what he's going to do with the dominant male appointees in terms of CEOs. He mentioned it, that there's only one CEO with a female, the rest are male, is going to do that. And then I want to dwell with much on that, including the board as well. But very interesting, Chairperson, if we can look at the board of the RSR, we will notice that there are four board members that are not the direct appointees of the minister. That is two from organized labor and one from SATS and one from Department of Labor. They are all named, but we will advise the minister in future talking to those departments and see what they can do. Maybe when we ask them to nominate people, they need also to consider female appointees when we appoint. I also noticed that in terms of retaining expertise so that there is continuity, we were able to convince two men and two females, and that is Mbiza with a female, and Masal Chambonami, and on the main part is General Center and Andre Harrison. It was just to indicate the things that are in terms of the board. But coming to the issue again on the other things which were also highlighted by the minister, we indicated that the bills, Minister indicated here yesterday that the bills were being processed by cabinet committees, which the minister was deployed to. So some of these things are on the way to the portfolio committee, which is going to deal with them. I wanted to also make a comment on the regulations by the CEO has indicated. The department responded on the things that are pending from the regulator. They are working on them. So we will deal with those things to ensure that we have this year and then submit to cabinet. Again, There is also the level crossings, which I think is also worth noting to indicate that level crossings, as in, especially in terms of the markings and signage, we need to know that at the moment it's a responsibility of the three spheres, which we have at the national level set up a steering committee, which also involves people from the road branch, because you have a situation where the road reserve, which is next to the river crossing, is either under a municipality or under a provincial government. We are working with our road counterparts and to ensure to me that the things that need to be factored in terms of the advanced technology that is recommended by the railway system regulator. I think I wanted to make those comments, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. You know, what screams to me listening to this morning is that I'm hearing a lot about PRAS, I'm not hearing anything really about the about Transnet, which means that I would assume that the relationship between the RSR and Transnet is much better than with PRAS. But with PRAS, one doesn't have to be a rocket scientist to know what's been going on. You know, there's been massive differences of opinion between the PRASA board and the management. We've had, I think, four CEOs in PRASA in the last number of years. So until, and the last 3 years, and then you've also coming to a stage where a new PRASA board will be appointed from August, and you will also have a new CEO of PRASA. So my advice to the RSR is really get your ducks in a row together with the DOT and start planning in the future, because it's no use looking back now. You've got to look forward and you've got to plan. So you've got a window of opportunity for a couple of months to do your planning so that you can move forward. And I just think that another thing that has always struck me from day one when I got into office in 2014, when I moved from education, I don't understand how you can run a system that is as asset heavy as rail under two different boards, a Transnet board and a PRASA board. To my mind, it's a common asset base, and you've got different functions. The one is passengers and goods. And I think the problem, as we have evolved since 1994, is we put too much emphasis on freight because of the boom in commodities to try and improve exports of freight. And I think our passengers have suffered. And I think also there has to be a way to deal with the needs of our rural communities and start having passenger coaches on the back of goods trains in the rural areas as well. It worked before, and I think it can work again. And those are discussions that I've had personally with Lynn Brown and Dupua Peters, and it's a matter that, you know, I will take up with the new Minister of Transport in due course as well, particularly in the Western Cape environment where we need collaboration in freight, but above all, we need to solve our commuter problems in the city itself. That's our number one priority. Thank you.
Can I help you? Thank you.
And then can I be excused? Sorry, I've got a 12 o'clock appointment.
Thank you very much.
And I trust that the silence from RSR means that I will get a reception sometime in Gauteng.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Provided you have reached over 10 of Race issues are a national competence. So I'm saying, irrespective of whatever that we're going to engage with the real estate regulation, we don't have a problem. As long as we're not going to step up with problems, we're not going to go into our territory as a national particular committee of transport.
We respect the Constitution.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Honorable Gina Hadden.
No, I'm not getting threatened. I'm very
scared. I'm not threatened anyway.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. I think, Chairperson, you have responded to most of the things.
Just two questions. The first one is on the agreement with the Chamber of Small Business. That we don't have any written agreement as yet, and I think it's a good advice that we have to engage on that. And then another question was on the board meetings and the board meetings and the remuneration. Just to explain that, in the meetings that have been played there, this board started on the first, was appointed from the 1st of November. So in November, there was only an inauguration meeting and the board induction, which is required in terms of your team report that there is an induction. So what you see in November, there was no meeting in November and December, but it was an induction that took place in November because the board was new. And the board has only had a formal meeting in January. Because of the period in which the board was appointed, we then had to have a strategic plan. So we spent 3 days on a strategic plan, which was the 19th of January, 17th and 18th of February. Those 3 days where we were actually getting to understand the strategy that we are presenting or that we're presenting here today. The new board had to allocate time to actually go through what Arizona is about. So you will then see that going forward, I think it's not presented here, the plan for 2017-18 is that the board should have six meetings, four normal meetings and two meetings that are actually aligned in order to approve certain statutory documents that need to go to DOT only or to audit only after they've been approved by the board. And there's no other meeting that is there. Thank you. I just wanted to respond to that. In terms of the remuneration of board members, of course board members are still paid based on the meetings that are attended according to the Treasury regulations. And I think that is also a matter that we still discussing with the minister in terms of how that can be made, that irrespective of how many meetings the board do, maybe there's a fixed salary so that it doesn't reflect this thing that you have a lot of meetings because you want to get paid. If there's a fixed amount, you still have to achieve and do your business and do it effectively. Thank you.
Only one or two of you. Chairperson, you know, to me, you are so lucky. How they are bought are sitting as if it's stipulated by the law that they support the community so that you can check and evaluate that it is correcting and doing the justice. And then also what is worrying me, Chairperson, last week. Chairperson, if you recall very well, the issue of the signals, of which they raised even today that they've got a problem with the signals. You see, to me, it's very much unfair that each and every time they are rising to the particular place, but they don't have the proposal of the way forward, how to sort them. I'll put an example about the issue of the signals. by couple it by the issue of sabotage, like a cabinet theft and the like, what is an alternative in terms of the ideas and the proposals and the way forward so that we can advise the relevant people so that they can take cautious about those things? I'll put it there, because of time.
Thank you very much. In 2 minutes, Mr. Poet.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I've said, Madam Chair, that there is a printed document that is submitted, and at the back of the printed document, it does have the financial information. My apologies for not projecting it, and I think that's what we're saying, Madam Chair. I still continue to say our apologies. In terms of signaling solutions, that's why we're having the conference taking place in Durban. One of the solutions is what we call in-cab signaling. The current rolling stock that is sitting in with Alstom or Kibela has what is called an in-cab signal. And that's why it's important for drivers to understand that that is a signaling system on the cab of the train itself, and therefore be able to consistently communicate that message so that people are well understanding of what that machine means. And that's really the future solution to dealing with how our issues of wayside signaling as we have and the theft that relates to those particular issues. But thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member
Sabine,
for your progress. Issues that have been highlighted by the members here, we definitely want to finish the processes of the budget cycle. We'll have to engage Sasha and the staff. So basically, we to finalize it because we can see that we're trying to drag this thing forward. And then somebody has got to find breaking the relationship that the race doesn't continue. Or FRASA is also trying to do the same thing. Somebody is trying to make sure that it doesn't move forward. So it is not as much make sure that both of you disagree in order to agree. Because at the same time, you will be we'll excuse you, and honorable member, starting at comfort break, we take Sandra, the media presentation, we go for lunch, and then we will come back on your
hand.
We'll take them up until the 1 o'clock and then go for lunch. Starting at comfort break, while Sandra is preparing
okay.
Come on, the morning. Morning,
morning.
So, I'm